When a gathering was conducted and concluded peacefully, the commissioners therefore assumed that the absence of conflict was due to their admonishment. In fact, one of the conditions of the Fort Laramie Treaty of 1851 was that the tribes of the Northern Plains were to forever cease and desist from any further intertribal warfare. While tribal representatives signed the treaty, once the gathering ended and they returned to their own territories, old hostilities were resumed. As a matter of fact, many of the tribes had come to Fort Laramie simply out of curiosity and to collect on a promise of goods from the U.S. government, blankets, food, cloth, beads, tools, implements, and so on. The gathering of tribes at the Horse Creek Council, as the Lakota and other tribes called it, was peaceful for the same reason that several generations of a Lakota family coexisted harmoniously in the same small dwelling. Respect. Old enemies who had clashed many times were able to temporarily set aside their animosities. 15 years later, in some 200 miles to the northwest of Fort Laramie, my ancestors accorded respect to a fallen enemy. In disregard of the conditions of another treaty promulgated at Fort Laramie, whites opened a trail through the heart of Lakota country in the Powder River region of what is now north-central Wyoming. The Bozeman Trail was a direct route to the gold fields of Montana. The U.S. government further violated its agreement with us by building three forts along the trail and causing an almost continuous conflict for a period of 6 years that was known as Red Cloud's War. Red Cloud was an Oglala Lakota leader who had been prominent in the Fort Laramie negotiations. Fort Phil Kearny was built in 1866, a few miles north of the present town of Buffalo, Wyoming, along the eastern slopes of the Bighorn Mountains, the Shining Mountains, as my ancestors called them. Almost from the day the U.S. Army contingent arrived to build the fort, the Lakota harassed them on a regular basis because the whites were there in violation of their promise to seek and obtain Lakota permission to enter the Powder River country. That harassment culminated in a decisive battle on the 21st of December. An 80-man combined force of infantry and cavalry were lured into a trap by 10 decoys led by Crazy Horse, who was 24 or 26 at the time. By the time the soldiers realized they had been led into an ambush, it was too late. A force of 500 to 700 Lakota and Northern Cheyennes wiped them out in less than an hour. History books call it the Fetterman Massacre. After the brash, Indian-hating officer who led his entire command to its death. We call it the Battle of the Hundred in the Hand. It was far from a massacre. It was a hard-fought battle in which the soldiers fought fiercely and inflicted heavy casualties. Toward the end of the fight, the Lakota saw one soldier fighting with nothing more than a bugle in his hands. He was killed, of course, but his bravery impressed those who witnessed his determined efforts. Out of respect for his bravery, he was not scalped, and one Lakota warrior went so far as to cover his body with a buffalo robe. Respect, as in the story of the young hunter who resisted the charms of the deer woman, can sometimes be a lifesaver. It did save the life of a Crow warrior who managed to sneak into a Lakota camp to steal a horse. The Crow warrior was young and was eager to prove himself. He had hidden near the Lakota camp and waited for nightfall, knowing that the best war horses and buffalo hunting horses were tied near the lodge doors for the night. When it was sufficiently dark, he crept into camp and carefully worked his way toward one particular lodge where a tall black war horse was picketed. He was so skillful and silent that not a single camp dog was aware of his presence as he cut the horse's lead rope. But he was not aware that two Lakota sentinels had spotted him and followed his every move. With bent bows, they waited for him to reach the edge of the camp. When he did, they would shoot him and recover the horse. As the Crow walked as nonchalantly as he could through the camp, An old woman emerged unexpectedly from one of the lodges. She hurried to the woodpile and took up a large armload of wood, so large, in fact, that she could barely carry it. The young crow, seeing the old woman's dilemma, immediately went to her aid and carried her firewood for her. He, of course, had a grandmother whom he admired and respected. When he finished his task, he turned to find the two Lakota sentinels waiting with their bent bows and arrows aimed at his chest. Instead of killing him, however, the sentinels recovered the nearly stolen horse, disarmed the crow, and escorted him a short distance from their village. From there, they turned him loose to return to his own village. Respect for the elderly was a common element among all the tribes of the plains. Respect manifests itself in many ways. The Lakota, as well as other plains tribes, were heavily dependent on the Tatanka, or bison, for their livelihood. The abundance of bison meant strength and prosperity, and the Lakota were grateful for that wealth. Careful preparations were made before bison hunts, and ceremonies were conducted to ask the bison for the privilege of taking and use of his flesh. After the hunt, the hunters respectfully thanked the animals for the gift of their lives and asked forgiveness as well. But it didn't end there. As a further demonstration of respect, the Lakota used every piece of the bison. Hides were used for winter robes and teepee coverings. Horns were turned into cups, ladles, and spoons. Sinew, the hamstring cord, was dried and used for thread and bowstring. Hooves were boiled to make the glue, and hair was twisted and made into cord and rope, and the like. Nothing was wasted. As a final act of respect, any time a Lakota found a bison skull, he or she would be certain it faced the east to meet the rising sun, so that the spirit of the animal could be in unison with the rhythm of life. Respect for all forms of life, unfortunately, is not a common value in many cultures today. It is easier to respect someone stronger, faster, smarter, or richer. Likewise, it is easy to respect someone who is as much like us in every way possible. Respecting someone with different beliefs, different dress, or different customs, or something entirely different from us, is not easy. Perhaps that is the tragic reason Luther Standing Bear's cautionary sentiments have come to pass. In December of 1998, 31 wild horses were shot and killed in a place called Largo Mocino Canyon, a rugged area just east of Reno, Nevada. Details of the killings brought to light by law enforcement investigators ignited local, national, and international outrage. Each of the victims had been shot in the hind legs or the stomach, or both in some cases. Some of the victims were pregnant mares, one of which went into labor after she was wounded, but expired before she could completely deliver her foal. Autopsies performed by several local veterinarians corroborated the preliminary evidence. The shooters, it would seem, wanted their victims to experience a painful, lingering death. 33 horses in all were killed. 31 were found dead in Largo Mocino Canyon, and 2, found shot and badly injured, had to be put down. 3 suspects were arrested and charged, initially with shooting 28 horses. A district judge later ruled that the evidence could support only 1 charge. The remaining charge amounts to gross misdemeanor and carries a penalty of 1 year in the county jail and a fine of $2,000. Regardless of the outcome of this case, the fact remains that wild horses were shot in such a manner to cause a slow, painful death. What would motivate or drive anyone to carry out such a horrific act? Possibly arrogance, a sense of impunity or invincibility, a lust for killing, or perhaps just plain boredom. Perhaps the more relevant question in this case is, what values are lacking in anyone who can kill horses in cold blood? A friend of mine, wrote of an incident during a hunt in Alaska. He and two companions, all accomplished hunters and guides, had been stalking Dall sheep. Two rams had eluded them, but by sheer luck they managed to surround a third. According to my friend, the ram probably had never seen humans in his life, and his initial curiosity turned to confusion. As the three hunters closed in on him, he frantically jumped from rock to rock, but had nowhere to go. My friend wrote of the incident. Two of my hunting partners and I once came face to face with the line that separates hunting from mere killing. In that situation, we had a chance to murder a full curl Dall sheep, but turned down the opportunity. In all my days of bow hunting, I have rarely felt pity for an animal because they usually have all the odds in their favor. But I felt pity for this sheep, and I knew I couldn't shoot him. Had we chosen, I feel certain we could have drawn the net tight and killed him as he jumped frantically around the rocks. Instead, we opened it and let him go, with shouts to be more careful next time.